You're in the clouds. Solid IMC center. Handed you off to approach 5 minutes ago. You read back the frequency. You checked in. Silence. You try again. Nothing. You scroll back to the departure frequency. Nothing. You dial up 121.5. Still nothing. The engine is running fine. The nav is tracking. The altimeter is doing its job. But the radio is dead, and you're somewhere inside the instrument system with an active clearance and no one answering the phone. What do you do? I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today we're breaking down Federal Aviation Regulation 91.185, the Lost Communications Regulation. This is one of those subjects that every instrument student crams hard before the oral exam, passes, and then quietly lets drift to the back of the drawer once the check ride is stamped. That's backwards. Because if it ever happens to you in actual IMC, it will happen quickly. It will be disorienting, and the time to work through this procedure is not when you're in the soup at 8,000 feet with no radio. Let's walk through this together, step by step. Before we get into the regulation, a quick word from our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for pilots at every stage of the journey. First solo, private pilot certificate, instrument rating, commercial. There's a coin for each one of those milestones, and they're the kind of thing you actually hold on to. A real tangible marker for the moments that matter. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right, 91.85. The first thing to understand is when this regulation kicks in, it covers IFR operations specifically. You're flying inside the instrument system. ATC has you under a clearance, and your two-way radio communications have failed. The emphasis there is on two-way. If your receiver is still working and you can hear ATC transmitting but cannot get a word out yourself, you have a different set of options. You can acknowledge clearances by squawking ident when ATC asks you to. If you're near an airport with an operating control tower, you can watch for light gun signals and follow them in. But if both sides of the radio are genuinely gone, 91.185 is your guide. And the very first thing you do before you even start thinking about route or altitude is this. Squawk 7600 on your transponder. 7600 is the discrete code for lost communications. It is internationally recognized. When an ATC facility sees 7600 appearing on their scope, they know immediately what kind of situation they are dealing with. They begin coordinating, they start clearing the airspace along your expected route, they notify the destination facility, they look for you on guard. Your transponder becomes your voice when your radio cannot speak. Squawk it early. Now, the regulation itself breaks down into two large questions. First, what are your meteorological conditions right now? At the moment, communications failed. VMC or IMC? Second, if you're in IMC, where do you go? What altitude do you hold? And when do you begin your approach? Let's take VMC first because it's the simpler of the two. If you are in visual meteorological conditions when the radio fails, the regulation is fairly direct. Fly VFR and land as soon as practicable. If you can see and be seen, get yourself out of the instrument system. Descend below the cloud layer, clear the congested airspace around controlled airports, find somewhere sensible to land, and call ATC when you're on the ground. The word practicable is doing a lot of work in that sentence, and it's worth slowing down on it. Practicable is not the same as possible. You're not being told to land in a field or divert to the nearest patch of pavement, regardless of circumstances. You're being told to use reasonable judgment. If you're in VMC 40 miles from your destination, with a perfectly usable airport 15 miles to your right and the weather at your destination is fine, think about what makes sense. The regulation gives you latitude there, intentionally. Now, the hard case, IMC. If you're in instrument meteorological conditions when communications fail, there's no going VFR. The option isn't on the table. You're staying in the system, and 91.185 lays out a three-part procedure: route, altitude, and timing. Each one is specific, each one is teachable. Let's go through them. Route first. When you're in IMC and the radio is dead, you still need to fly somewhere. The regulation gives you four choices in a specific priority order, and the mnemonic that captures that order is AVF. Alpha Victor Echo Foxtrot. A is for assigned. Fly the route ATC most recently assigned you in your last clearance. Direct to a waypoint, an airway, a published departure routing, whatever was most recently assigned. That's your first choice. V is for vectored, if you were being radar. Vectored when communications failed, you don't have an assigned airway. You have a heading and a clearance limit. The intent here is to continue toward the fix ATC was vectoring you to, and then connect back to your filed or assigned routing once you reach it. E is for expected. If ATC told you to expect a specific route at some point further along, expect direct destination after next E fix, and communications fail before you've received that clearance. Fly the expected route. The regulation treats an expected clearance as usable guidance precisely because both you and ATC share the same expectation. F is for upfiled. If none of the above applies, fly the route in your original flight plan. The priority runs from most recently known to least recently known. ATC tracks all of these. When you disappear from the frequency, they don't just sit there. They start working backward through the same list. They're coordinating between facilities. They're looking for your transponder. They're protecting the airspace along your most likely path. AVF keeps you where they're looking. Here's a thought that I think makes this stick better than just memorizing the letters. The entire IFR system is designed around predictability. Every procedure, every altitude, every clearance exists, so that controllers and pilots can operate from the same picture even in low visibility with a lot of airplanes in a small piece of sky. Lost comm is just a test of whether that shared picture holds together when one link fails. If you fly AVE, they can find you. If you go rogue, you've broken the picture entirely. Now altitude. This is where students stumble more than anywhere else. And I think it's because three numbers are in place simultaneously, and the instruction to fly the highest of all three feels counterintuitive at first. The three altitudes are the minimum en route altitude for the segment of airway you're currently flying, the altitude ATC told you to expect in a further clearance, and the altitude ATC last assigned you. The rule is, fly the highest of the three. Let's unpack why. The minimum en route altitude is the floor. It's published right on your en route chart for every segment of every airway. It exists to keep you clear of terrain and obstacles with the appropriate buffer built in. You should never go below it under any circumstances. The expected altitude is whatever ATC told you to anticipate. Expect 9,015 miles. If you received that transmission and then lost comm, 9,000 is your expected altitude. The assigned altitude is whatever you were last cleared to. Maintain 7,000, that's your assigned. The reason you fly the highest is terrain protection and also intent. When ATC tells you to expect a higher altitude, it's usually because the routing ahead requires it. The MEA goes up. The terrain goes up. Something ahead demands more altitude. By climbing to the highest of the three, you're flying where the system intends for you to be at that stage of the route. Here's a concrete example. You're cleared to 6,000. The MEA ahead on your airway is 8,000. ATC said expect 10,000 in 20 miles. You lose comm. Your assigned is 6,000. Your minimum is 8,000. Your expected is 10,000. You climb to 10,000, that's the call. And here's a mistake I see instrument students make during oral exams. They pick one of the three altitudes as their answer instead of comparing all three. They'll say, I'd fly my assigned altitude without checking whether the MEA or the expected altitude is higher. You have to compare all three every time. Now timing. This is the third piece of the regulation, and honestly, the most nuanced part. The question is, when do you leave your clearance limit and begin your approach? Your clearance limit is the fix where your clearance ends. For most instrument flights, the clearance limit is the destination airport. Sometimes ATC will issue a clearance to an intermediate fix and issue the rest of the clearance later. If you lose comm before that later clearance comes, you need to know when to go. The regulation breaks into two scenarios based on one factor. Did ATC give you an expect further clearance time? If ATC gave you an EFC time, which they typically do when they hold you or anticipate a delay in issuing an onward clearance, the rule is if you arrive at the clearance limit before the EFC time, hold. Leave the clearance limit at the EFC time and begin the approach. If ATC did not give you an EFC time, the rule is leave the clearance limit and begin the approach as close as possible to your estimated time of arrival, calculated from the estimated time en route in your filed flight plan. That second rule is the one that catches people. The instinct is to say, if I get there, I just go. And in practice, if you arrive right at your filed ETA, that is effectively what you do. But the regulation is asking you to fly your filed ETE as a schedule, not just a rough estimate. ATC is planning around that clock. If your filed ETA is 3:45, they're clearing the approach environment for 3:45. If you arrive at 3:30, you hold a few minutes. If you arrive at 3:47, you start immediately because you're already past your ETA. This is why your filed estimated time en route actually matters. not just for ATC planning on a normal flight, but in this specific scenario where your filed ETE becomes the timing reference, ATC, and you're both working from. Let me walk through a complete scenario. You depart IFR destination 90 miles out, you're cleared via the departure procedure, direct to a waypoint, then airway Victor 12 to destination, maintain 6,000, expect 9,000 10 minutes after departure. No EFC time is issued, you depart. You're climbing through 7,000, you're handed off to center. You check in, nothing. You try again, nothing. Solid IMC, step 1, squawk 7600. Step 2, conditions, IMC, staying in the system. Route, your assigned route is direct to the waypoint, then Victor 12 to destination, that's your A in AVE. You're on it, continue, altitude. Your assigned was 6,000, let's say the MEA on Victor 12 is 8,000. Your expected altitude was 9,000, highest of the three is 9,000, climb to 9,000. Timing? Do you have an EFC? No. Your filed ETE is 45 minutes. You departed at 2 o'clock, so your ETA is 2:45. You fly Victor 12. Arrive at the destination around 2:45 and start the approach. Meanwhile, center has notified approach. Approach has notified the tower. They're watching for a 7600 squawk. They've moved other traffic. When you break out and switch to tower, or when you land and call the ground phone, the system did exactly what it was designed to do. One more thing worth noting, because it is both practical and easy to overlook. Before you're ready to declare that you have a genuine lost comm situation, make sure you've actually tried everything on your end. Check your audio panel. Check that you haven't accidentally selected an intercom-only position. Check your squelch. Try a different radio if you have one. Try a different frequency. Try guard. Avionics can do strange things. And there is a meaningful difference between a failed radio and a misconfigured audio panel. The time you spend confirming the failure is real costs very little. Declaring lost comm prematurely and then reappearing on frequency a minute later is not a disaster, but it creates workload for ATC and for you. Be thorough before you commit to the procedure. The Airman certification standards for the instrument rating will test you on 91.185 in the oral exam. The examiner wants more than a recited mnemonic. They want to see that you understand why the priorities are ordered the way they are, why you fly the highest altitude, and how the timing reference works. Walk them through a scenario. Show them you've thought about it as a system, not just a checklist. And once the rating is yours, keep this one loaded. Brief it to yourself on a long cross-country. Run the scenario in your head. Because the version of this you want in your hands when the radio actually goes quiet is not the version you last studied 4 years ago. Sources today: Federal Aviation Regulation 91.185 and the Aeronautical Information Manual, Chapter 6. Section 4, which lays out the timing diagrams in a way that makes the EFC scenarios much cleaner. I'm Pattern. Traffic Pattern lives at radiohangar.com. Know the procedure. They're looking for you.